Hello, 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 hello.
Yo, you hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you fine. You hear me fine?
Yeah, I'm hearing you well, man.
Right. Just now before we get into anything. Yeah, all right. Okay. All right, everybody. Welcome to the new rebranded Plain Talk Bad Manners podcast. I am your host, Trini Hotep, and I'm here joined today by a very special guest once again. As I told you all, I was going to come with, you know, regular uploads and more guests. So any guests I get will be fine with me, but I'm always good to have reoccurring guests on this podcast. So I'm going to let my guest introduce himself. Then we're going to get into this topic for the podcast. So my guest, please introduce yourself so we could start this thing off.
Yeah, man. I am Nathan Springer. I also do a bit of online recording and podcasting, I guess. I do a live show on weekdays, the Mindful Live Show, and I do some videos, short videos online, some content. I'm a content creator, I guess. Creating content around, you know, knowledge and current affairs and that kind of stuff. Like, you know, a little history and stuff, because, you know, I have a bit of a background in teaching. I'm a teacher also. So, yeah. That's what I do.
Yeah, man. I think many Trini people had us had to call themselves content creators. I mean, we need digital space after all. not only Americans could call themselves content creators. We create content too. We are all over the place. And I'm finding a lot of content creators these days. So it's very interesting. Yeah, we content creators, man. And I'm saying we create content for people to be enjoyed and entertained and be informed. So, yeah, today's episode, today's topic, which going to be in direction of why the rebrand is happening, Plain Talk Bad Manners. Today's topic is revolution, comrade, power. Right, and I'm going to start off with a question first, because I think we need to understand where this particular topic is going to go. So, Nathan, bro, what do you think about revolution?
About revolution? Well, I like, to some extent, the idea of the topic, of the word and the idea of the meaning, but it's I guess, what the person or what somebody is using it for. Because if you're talking about the revolution, as we more use it in the modern context, where, you know, it could be figurative, and you're talking about revolution as in turning around, revolve, you know, you're turning to another direction, and you have a revolution of mind, you have a revolution of consciousness, and that kind of thing. I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. Sometimes, you know, if you're in a culture that is going in a certain direction and you recognize that, okay, there's something that could revolutionize my culture, well, you adopt it and you have that cultural revolution in that sense. But in general, the wider generality, as they use revolution in terms of politics, I don't like that either, because the idea that you're going to forcibly just change things all of a sudden and it's going to be better is almost never what happens. There are more ways to make things worse than there are to make things better. That's the way you could generally think about it. And I think it's kind of extremely immature. That's why it's understandable when very young people are revolutionaries in nature, because they haven't seen that much. It's a bit of an immature mindset and worldview, I think, to believe that you could just topple things and it's automatically going to end up in a way that was better than all these millions of humans that came before you could have created. That's some serious narcissism to some extent too.
well, Okay, that's very interesting. That's interesting. Now, me personally, how I view it, because I tend to want to always be objective with a lot of things. What I think about revolution is this. I think it's quite something that running the course of human history, I think it's something that comes about quite frequently, right? Like when you take a look at many countries or nations, you quite see that particular trend. So to me, I'm like, I could get down with some parts of revolution, right? Some parts I can't get down with, but I think more so is that it's bound to happen with any kind of system, per se. Like it's always there, ready, you know?
Well, to that extent, I could agree that it seems like with human nature, it seems like it's inevitable in time because systems tend to accrue power in a certain direction, and people don't like that. So very often, revolution seems like a necessary part of it. If there isn't revolution, you need to have constant amendment, constant reformation if it's not revolution. So I could see it as inevitable, but from my point of view, it's not just only about the inevitability, it's about whether it's, as it were, a good idea. Most times, to me, it isn't.
No, well, we will get dug into that, you know. We will definitely get out into that because why? And before I ask that, now I personally know about your stance on socialism slash communism, but our listeners, and I'm asking the question before we dive deep into it, I want listeners to hear why what you think about socialism and communism. So when you get into that, then we'll get into why I formulate the topic like I have.
All right. Well, for me, socialism and communism, like communism is the logical end of socialism. From him according to his ability, to him according to his need, the general idea that there is there. And I think the problem with communism is the attempt to treat human beings like a species that we are not, that somehow we could recreate the nature of man to be one that is totally helpful, you know, that is total, that seeks his fellow man's interest above all. While contrary to that, the general free market system hinges on the human nature to seek his own self-interest above all. And I think when you're looking at wider systems, it makes more sense to hinge something on something much more reliable, like human beings seeking their own self-interest rather than the contrary. And to hold things on the contrary, it almost always creates for some unhealthy incentives, where if I am supposed to work as hard as I can and put as much as I can into the system, and all I get is the same amount out of it. If I work harder, if I work less, if I work more, I get the same amount out of it. There's no incentive for me to do more. And that's the general idea of socialism. I don't care about my fellow man enough, generally speaking. I'm talking about the general humankind, that I am going to sacrifice my extra labor to just put it into the system so that someone else there could get out my extra labor. And I don't believe that everyone is so honest that they would work as honestly hard as they can and just take only what they need. People would be freeloaders. If you do that, people will be freeloaders. That's inevitable. Like the idea of that communism, socialism style is an idea for families where, okay, I have a familial tie with a group, so I am okay with working harder for some family member of mine to do something else where they could use my resources. That's a kind of socialism, communism vibe in a family, maybe even in a wider community where my neighbors, I'm familiar with them. I may be okay with doing similar for them. I might pave the whole road if I am able to do such and they benefit from it, and I'm okay with that. We're neighbors together. They would do something else for me. But to tie me together in an entire country like that, That sounds like an insane plan. And ultimately, that's on the human nature side of it. Ultimately, when it comes to the political side, the expression of socialism and communism, where the idea is that everyone, all individuals, we all have an equal say, and you know, we can all share everything. No one person owns everything. Everyone owns everything. The actual way that actually expresses itself in politics, everyone cannot actually own everything. There's no deed with every person's name signed onto it. What ends up happening is the representative of everyone ends up owning everything. The political class, the politicians, end up owning / controlling everything in socialism. So you never get away from individuals with great power. You could decide in a free market capitalistic society that the individuals with great power are the individuals who are able to supply resources or services that other people want the most of. Or you could decide in a socialistic communistic society that the individuals with the greatest power are the people who are able to sway the people best to their machinations. I think I'm more okay with the free market side personally.
that's interesting. And here's why I come about this particular topic. I came about a rather interesting YouTube channel by the name of The People's Profile. Mm. And they do like long form documentaries, extensive research on the profiles of people in history. And I've looked at, they did a dictator series, right? Mm-hmm. Based upon the many dictators of the world. And I think I started off with Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough. And then I led into Mao, Pol Pot, Vladimir Lenin, which we will get to. those guys. And now, here's the thing for me. What seems to be very interesting when I, and Idi Amin and all those guys, what seems to be very interesting to me is how many dictators in the world come about formulating how they're going to acquire power through the means and machinations of socialism. Like every person I've watched in the documentary that has been a dictator to some degree, they've all come about through socialism. Like they've compelled the people through socialism. They have arrived to power through socialism. And I find that very interesting, right? Like, I haven't heard one dictator yet come through the means of capitalism.
There are very few capitalistic dictators. They would call them far right. And if you go far right enough, you end up fascist. And the idea of fascism kind of ends up back at communism to some extent, where the idea of that far right is they're looking to merge government with private. So you have the private enterprise, the barons of business, but then they are kind of merged with the government. So to some extent, yeah, like some of those words are obsolete to some extent in modern world, but to some extent what you see happening in the United States, where Twitter was at, or X as it's now called, was to some extent an arm of the government in a way, but it was a private corporation, but they were doing it of their free volition to some extent. And so a capitalist dictator, if you were looking for one, is the guy Pinochet from, is it Chile? One of those Chile. South American countries. Chile? So he was a right wing.
I think Pinochet was. He was. Very much so, the American government allowed him to do whatever he wanted.
Right.
until he allowed socialism up inside of there and America said none of that. Which is interesting, but we will get to all of that because here's the thing. So I started off with Gaddafi because I say, okay, let me not be biased and start off with a non-African. I say, let me not be biased. Let me start off with somebody at least a little bit close to home. You know what I'm saying? So I started off with Gaddafi. And now Gaddafi, to me, tends to be on the lighter end of what we would call dictators, because what I have extensively seen with these documentaries in terms of dictators, I don't think Gaddafi could even match some of these dictators in my regard. But Gaddafi, no. Here's the thing about this is the thing about leaders in general. To me, they don't seem like black and white. They are complex people.
That is humans, bro. Humans on a whole. Yeah. That's true.
And to me, how people like on Twitter or any other space, to me, how people discuss leaders in such a weird way of extremes is kind of crazy to me. Because, okay, let's look at Gaddafi. Now, in the beginnings of Gaddafi, it would make sense, right? You want independence for your country. You want the colonizers of Italy to leave. That's fine. You want self-determination for all Libyan people. That's fine to me. To me, that sounds fine enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, how Gaddafi solidified power, that's how it started to be like, okay, now you're going downhill, sir. And here's the thing. This is the thing for me. Gaddafi and many others, their dislike and hatred of the West has capitulated into the point of wanting socialism over capitalism. And Gaddafi, being the man he was, which he was brutal by the way, I don't think people quite understand Gaddafi in Africa. As one of the dictators of Africa, he man was brutal. That documentary, that man openly shoot people in the middle of Libya squares. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the socialism was always at the center of it, right? His party that he picked, you know, the style of government, it was a one-party state. And he killed all political opponents, suppressed the people, suppressed free speech, suppressed free freedom of the press. And I'm like, how does this make sense as somebody who started off wanting independence for your people and self-determination? You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm wondering,
I understand perfectly what you're saying. And that is the difficulty. Like, I hope that's not the direction it would end up in, but we could be watching that happening, for example, right now live with Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, where you're seeing the start of, I remember a quote from Jurassic Park, where I believe it was from the second Jurassic Park, and the guy, somebody came in and like, ooh, and it's so marvelous. And the guy was like, yeah, it always starts like that with the oohs and the ahs. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of truth with what, like, the world we started speaking about, revolution. When you start off with that revolutionary mind, in France, the king and queen were abusing the people. The people were suffering. Okay, this is going to get good. Great. We get into power, we depose them, we put them in a corner. We don't have to worry about them anymore. But then again, the king and queen, they're influential. If we just put them in a corner, the same thing happened in the Russian Revolution too. If you leave them there, they're influential. So we can't leave them there. Well, we'd have to kill them. That's for the cause. Okay, fine. We'll kill them for the cause. But if we leave the children of the king and queen, that's the nature of monarchy. It's a kind of a lineal thing with your family, a genial thing. So, well, we'd have to kill the children. As brutal as that sounds, we might hide that one. But it's for the cause, for the betterment of the nation. Okay, well, we kill them. But then you recognize after you kill them, there are some people in the nation who don't just want to do what you tell them to do. You want the best for the nation, but these people aren't listening. And that's humans. That's the nature of people. You can't get everyone to listen. So how are you going to get them to listen? If you already started with brutality and violence to get into the position of power, and you say that the reason you did all of that violence was to make the nation a better nation. If anybody stands in opposition to you, what else will you do? You must but continue in violence.
That's interesting. And to shift, I think to shift, the man that really propelled this whole thing into the direction it is, And it's not Karl Marx, by the way. He just come up with the foundation and the theory of communism. I think the man that really felt it into the forefront is the man who sparked the October Revolution of Russia, Vladimir Lenin. The thing is, the documentary that I watched on Vladimir Lenin, it was interesting, right? He was exiled from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He spent his time in different countries, coming up with socialist theories and whatnot, right? And then he sparked his revolution in Russia, right? But his theory is that he don't believe in organic, you know, communism. He believes in forcing communism to happen, which is interesting, right? Because how I used to think about it was, okay, all socialists and communists used to think alike, right? Mm. You know, Marxist was the same. But in watching the documentary, I'm like, okay, his stance and Karl Marx's stance is fundamentally kind of different. Yep. Karl Marx believed in organic, you know, getting to that kind of place, right? He believed in, I think Karl Marx believed in a bourgeoisie class ruling and then getting to communism. And Lenin believed in outright the country supposed to be communist.
Well, and you see, if you read, and this is why Marxism, it is an area of study, because lots of Marxists were scholars, they were theorists. Many of them wrote down pretty clearly what they thought. And there are different schools of Marxism, different theories of how you attain. The general idea is to attain the communist utopia to some extent. But so different people have different ideas of how you reach there. So like some American Marxists, they were of the view, they recognized that the United States capitalism, it fulfilled its promise. It made the middle class happy. And a happy working class would not revolt. They wouldn't get the revolution. That's the problem that Trinidad and Tobago always faces. Whenever people call about protests and why we're not in the streets and why Trinis don't protest and Trinis just take everything. Because Trinis are happy, by and large. Granted, we have a crime-infested country. Crime is bad, horrible. But the economy-wise, in terms of comfort, in terms of your general needs of life, Trinis are by and large pretty comfortable. And comfortable people, you don't get them in revolution by and large. So the Marxist theorists on the United States side, they came up with the neo-Marxist theory of the critical race theory that you heard talking about in the last 2-3 years, etc. That was a neo-Marxist theory that they were trying to adopt the Marxist theories on how to reach to the communist utopia, but fit it to American realities. And different people did that differently throughout. So some people realized that, you know, like Lenin, he realized that, you know, we wouldn't be able, the monarchy is just too strong. We wouldn't be able to just work our way with propaganda and get it done. We have to actually get a little violent in here. And different schools of Marxism have different levels of violence that they're okay with.
No, that's true, because the thing about it is, no, I disagree with Lenin 100% in the way how he went about his governance of the country. Because, okay, this is the unique thing about Russia, right? And this is why I think revolution is kind of a thing that's bound to happen to some degree, right? Mm. Because the czars of Russia were running Russia for the past, before Lenin, before the revolution, pretty horribly, right? And the people were suffering under the czars for quite some time. So I could understand sparking a revolution from that.
Mm-hmm.
But then Lenin's whole iron fist approach to solving the problems of his country is deeply horrible. The man caused like 5 million, maybe to 10 million people to die from the onset of his policies alone.
And in the long run, I think the death toll could have crossed 100 million in the long run. And you know what? Hutapu, I think, is a major cause of some of these problems. an incorrect worldview, a worldview, and it's kind of this French philosopher, Rousseauian, man is born free, but everywhere I look around and I see him in chains, where the idea is somehow that the nature, the natural default setting of man is in a perfect utopic setting. And the only way we get bad things is society makes mistakes and we get bad things. And I think that's incorrect. If you think of man as the fallen nature, more view of it, where man is in a imperfect world where entropy exists and things wither away, and mankind is selfish and has his own yearnings that go in different directions that often go against his own self-interest, and you have these complicated relationships, and society is an attempt to solve some of those problems as best as we can. So when you have that understanding, you look at society in its imperfections and you understand, okay, It's imperfect because we live in an imperfect world with imperfect people, and we're trying to get that better. While if you think that mankind is naturally perfect in his natural state, and you look at society and see imperfections, you're saying that, well, society is doing something wrong, so we could fix that. The idea that you could fix that oftentimes is the wrong idea. We saw this with COVID. Sometimes some of the things you do is actually what will make it worse. You cannot fix it. There's nothing that a human could do to solve this issue.
No, and that's kind of true. That's kind of what I see in modern sphere. And it hasn't really changed, to be honest. You see it all over the place. Especially with these online activist revolutionary folks. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, okay, right now the Israel-Palestine conflict is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's many first world revolutionaries sitting down on Twitter in their happy homes while people get bombed, right? And they're talking about revolution for the people. And I'm like, why are you talking revolutionary talk and you sit down in the middle of London, one of the most safest cities in the world to live in, and talk about revolutionary talk on Twitter X? And I'm wondering, like, where did you come about with revolution on your tongue? You don't even live there. You haven't lived there. You haven't lived through anything. You believe capitalism to be flawed, and sure, we could debate capitalism on if it's a flawed system or not, but you want to be a socialist, communist, revolutionary, and you want it for Palestinian people, and you want it for Hamas, and like, do you understand do you even understand the ideology of Palestinian people? You just see one view and think that's how it's supposed to be for that group, because you see it from the outside, because your fundamental ideology shape how you think it should be. And I'm like, that's crazy, because, okay, take for example, one of the person I look up, Pol Pot. Pol Pot, and even in the documentary said that Pol Pot didn't really care for the socialism theories anyway. Didn't study Marx.
Pol Pot was a dunce.
Right? And it's funny, he, from his view, he believed that Cambodia should be in a particular way. And he changed Cambodia into fundamentally a total agrarian society. And I'm sure some people today would be like, yes, farming is everything.
Mm.
Okay. Do you know what went on with Pol Pot? Pol Pot killed every single man. Yeah. I think it was like 1/3 of the population was eliminated in fields.
Yep.
That's crazy, right? Because he believed that his quest for his society was through agrarian means, right? Because urban society was the killer of all things of his country, which is crazy to me, right? And he was Cambodian himself, right? And he killed his own people. Same thing with Mao, right? Mao believed that his country should go, 5-year plans and the Great Leap. Well, the Great Leap killed millions of people, basically. So I'm wondering with how revolutionaries think today, and how communist people think today. I'm wondering, like, do you understand the theories that you people follow? The people that came up with it and try to put, and the people come, and the people that come after who try to put it in practice, fundamentally lost or basically destroyed societies. And I'm like, how could that be, right?
I you see, that's because so real socialism has never been tried, and it the university lecturers keep pumping it into young impressionable minds. So they all think that this is going to be the thing that makes me moral. And in a world where especially religions are being killed out, so like if you send your child to school till they're 26, they're never going to be taught a religious thing. But they're going to have the God-shaped hole. If you look in psychology, they talk about that, the yearning for moral side of things, they're going to have that. What do you replace it with? Well, a moral political philosophy, something that is all encompassing, just as religion would have been, just as religion would have taken every aspect of your life. Now this takes every aspect of your life. Everything in my life now is to work on behalf of the oppressed against the oppressor. And that's why every conflict in the world, they want to jump in with Palestine and Israel and talking about oppressed and oppressor, like this is just a capitalist versus socialist issue in the Middle East there. Well, that's not what is going on there. You were talking about some of their philosophies and what they think. When you look at what happened in Israel, your view of the history of it being whatever it may, looking at the facts of the situation as they stand right now, where what happened on October 7th, you look at these people celebrating what happened on October 7th, and they weren't celebrating that based on a Palestinian Islamist cause, or based on a Palestinian Arab cause, or based on a Palestinian nationalist cause. No, they were celebrating that based on a global leftist cause, believing that somehow the left oppressed side struck a blow against the right oppressor side in the global conflict that they see. And now, if you consider what that means, and there are many people who said this, this isn't some strange thing, there are people celebrating that all over. When you look at what that means, is if they see themselves as the left oppressed, and they put you into the oppressor class, and they celebrate the murder of civilians, that all their only sin was being a member of the oppressor class. You understand what that means in how they see you, and the dangers of people having this kind of thinking walking around in our society. It's a murderous kind of thinking.
No, and that's true, but I don't expect any less for people who stick up Mao pictures in the right? Because they glorify certain figures, right? And they could care less. They believe that's the means to the end. And I find that very funny, because these are the same revolutionary people who believe in freedom for the people, freedom for the world. But you're willing to celebrate the killing of people, innocent people at that, just because you believe that they are in the wrong. So to me, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, I think revolutionary people today, communist people today, they will support anybody that align with them. I see people tweet about how Hitler was, some way Hitler was right. And people was like, I think Hitler was onto something. What? I'm like, what? Wait, Hitler was onto what? Because you always see people before October 7th, who was like, Hitler was the evilest man on the planet. How Hitler become a good figure right now? Oh, because you all believe that the Jews are evil today, right? It's kind of crazy, right?
So, bro, so what that tells you too, is you have to be careful about people like that as your allies on your side too. Because if at some moment they believe you are, it's convenient to treat you on the other side, the problem is, and this is the problem to me, the problem with having a political ideology take the place of morality or a religious dogma, as you would, because you look at the major world religions and the fightings that exist, be it as it may, At least they have a book. They have a book. They have a corpus of theories that people could look back to that doesn't readily change. It's stable. If something is wrong with it, well, you could point at the book and try and discuss that and tweak it a bit. But when you're talking about political ideology, something that could change on a week's notice, because it's politics. And if you have that as your moral backing, that means this week you could say that the Ukrainians are the most righteous people on this earth. We must spend everything we can. All effort must be given towards pushing back the evil Russians. And then the next week you jump on the Russian side because the Russians are with the Palestinians fighting against the Israelis there. So the Russians are actually working with the global oppressed people. You don't have any stability in that. It's not a concrete moral philosophy.
No, and that's true, because what I see as a theme within many communist regimes is the rejection of religion, right? Which is interesting to me, right? I find it very interesting. Every documentary I've seen so far, they have outright, with probably the exception of maybe like a Gaddafi type, right?
Why because do you think that is? Why do you think that is? I have my theory on why I think it is. Why do you think it is?
I think because let's take for instance Mao, because right now China, most of its population is irreligious, right? So what I think in terms of rejection of religion in terms of our communist regime, I think that's really to grip the people within total secularism. Like it's to fundamentally indoctrinate the population into a secular politic worldview. Instead of it is basically more along the lines of controlling your masses. The same way how the same group tell us that religion is to control the masses.
That's ironic, yeah? It's ironic. I just said what you said. I just was thinking what you said, Diana. It's so ironic where the people say religion is the opiate of the masses. Religion is used to control the people, etc., etc. But in what you're seeing there, in your estimation from looking at history, it seems like the lack of religion is also used to control the masses too.
It is because here's the thing. I saw people glorifying China for that particular video that has circulated with all the children in the classroom, one uniform, all of them moving in one unison like an army. You know what I'm saying? And the Americans talking about, oh my God, how I wish for this in the American system. So I'm like, is you crazy? That is the literal foundation of a communist regime, to totally control its populace, especially through the children. I'm like, y'all are crazy. When your child becomes basically a person of the state, that's your lineage down the drain pipe, because now they have become a comrade, as they like to say, right?
Exactly.
They have become a sword and shield, or what it is, a sickle and a sickle. So it's like a sickle.
Hammer and sickle.
Yeah, and a hammer. So they are the sickle and hammer for the regime, right? And sure, yes. You know,
you're saying there, I agree, and I like that lack of religion is also as it were the opiate of the people. Because what I kind of notice and figure, the reason religion could control the people is because religion posits a moral view where you could get everyone to act a certain way along a certain line. But political philosophy does the same thing. And the problem with religion is religion butts itself up against political philosophy. So why is it that Africa wouldn't accept the, As some on the far right say in the US, the global homo? I don't know if you encountered that word, the globalist kind of super liberal Western agenda. Why is it so many African nations are rejecting it? And if you look at the reasoning for many of them is religious. they don't do it because it's against their religion. And religion is oftentimes the bulwark against political philosophy overtaking everything. So if I want to push up a political philosophy where the intention is to take over everything, what I would do initially is get rid of religion. That's one of the first things I'm doing, getting religion out of there. So that when my political philosophy comes now, I don't have to worry about the pastors every Sunday telling their members that they shouldn't do what I tell them to do. No, the only pastor they listen to is me when I stand up on my political pulpit and speak.
No, that's true, because it's real funny, because to me, the radical revolutionary really believe that they are immune to the concept of indoctrination, because they believe they have been indoctrinated, as they would say. They have psychologically turned off the brainwashing, and now they're on the correct path. So they believe that their radical communist revolutionary worldview is that of a pure mindset. And that's crazy to me, not knowing that the fundamental point of our ideology to some degree is that the people who are at the top of it want to control you at the end of the day. So we could say that, yes, we could say that the Pope and many higher people in religious organizations want to use their machinations to do harm to you or to indoctrinate you. It's the same way how many leaders of communist regimes also want you to believe in their cause wholeheartedly and die for it. So I don't understand how they could ever believe that they are on the right path and could never be indoctrinated by political ideologies, but everybody else is indoctrinated by religious ideologies. That's crazy.
Like, for me, the benefit that there is to religion is we could argue this outside because there's a book. We could argue the Christians' religion because we could look at their book. We could argue the Muslims' religion because we could look at their book. We could argue the Jews' religion, we could look at their book. We could argue some of Hinduism's religion, we could look at their books and their teachings. But there's a basis upon which I could attempt to decide if your moral stance makes sense. But a homosexual man is born this way, so you cannot say that anything is wrong with him. He's born being attracted to he's born as a man being attracted to males. But then at the same time, a male could decide whether they're a male or a female. And if a male decides they're a female, they're fully well a female. Those two things aren't logically consistent, but they're politically consistent. And they could work both on the same political side. Because politics doesn't need that moral and logical consistency. And that's the problem when you replace the moral backings that once upon a time was religion, and now it's only politics. For a whole generation of people, what they deem as good is really a political stance.
No, that's true. That's why they get... And that's why the radical activists will say they find it very odd that they get pushed back, because every time they expound on something political or to that leaning, they think that's supposed to hold firm within the logical framework.
Exactly.
Because they believe America right now fundamentally kind of exists in a secular way. Because right now America is eroding its religious, like, religion at this present moment. They believe that just because America is fundamentally shifting to liberal secular ways, they believe that, okay, as the activist class, we could just railroad certain political stuff through the society as supposed to make sense. But no, people's logic are going to come into frame anyway, taking it and be like, okay, that doesn't make sense. So why must I agree with it? Because you think I must agree with it. That don't make sense to me. So the activist class really believe that people's logic are not going to come forth because people believe in secularism today over a fundamental religious state.
And, you know, is the to pull it back into the what we were talking about with leftism and socialism, and where I was saying, I think it's to some extent a clash of worldviews, in that one worldview where they believe mankind in its natural state, the leftists. So there's some way we could tweak society into making a perfect man, like the people who somehow believe that we could do societal policies enough on the political level to stop homelessness. That doesn't happen. That's not where that is solved. But someone who believes that, as I was saying, it has to end up being, as it were, moral belief. And that's why to many leftists, opposition to leftism is evil. You can't oppose what I'm saying and be a good person, because what I'm saying is the good thing. This is how we get good done in the world, through this political action. So if you oppose this, then you're an evil person, right? So I want to socialize healthcare, and that's how we're going to make sure that there are no sick people in the world. And I do that because I'm a good person. And if you think that we should not socialize healthcare, that means you're an evil person and you want everybody to die of cancer and a bus too. While it's not that simple of a binary, somebody who has a different worldview understanding, it's already an imperfect world. We're trying to balance an imperfect situation. You're trying to see what the opportunity costs might be, where we're going to give, where we're going to take. You understand that, and that's where your balance is. You understand these things. Sometimes it's a move of practicality. Like, whoa, I have no interest in war. I'm kind of a pacifist, but I am not going to act like civilians dying in a war is an amazing thing. Saudi Arabia murdered something like 200,000 Yemenis over the course of under a decade. No one was really in the streets about that. That's war. I can't pretend like I don't understand that. I am of the view, I understand that's how reality is. We're trying to do things to try and tweak reality to best suit us. But it's not like if we leave it to be, somehow we could make this entire utopia. It's not going to happen like that.
No, and that's true. But what's funny in the flawed ideology of today's leftist, you know, revolutionary, is that the people who they support, as they think, are the oppressed. Some of who they claim would be the oppressed class would obviously agree with some of the ideologies, but some don't. Some you think you're supporting a group that you think would align with you, but they don't align with you. Like, Hamas does not care for a secular society. Hamas
doesn't
care for your liberal, hoity-toity, socialist, well, you know, help everybody in the world, humanitarian causes. They could
Did you see the videos of the clashes between some Muslim Palestinian supporters and Antifa Palestinian supporters?
Oh, yes. I've seen that. I've also seen the clash of pro-Palestinian supporters and Black Israelites.
Oh, yes. We the because, real Jews, bro.
No, because here's the thing, bro, is that, okay, Black people have struggles. Black people have a lot of struggles, right? So why would pro-Palestinian supporters want to attack our Black Israelite brethren on that side? Just because they believe that they are Israelites. Now, me, I don't fundamentally believe that these Black people claim to be Israelites are Israelites.
I don't even know how it started, but for all you know, remember the Black Hebrew Israelites would be walking with like Israeli insignia and stuff. So they might have had a Star of David hanging there, and they walk into the protest. It's not like they went in supporting current Israel. They're with their in normal Hebrew insignia. And if you're pro-Palestine and you see somebody coming with a Star of David, you're not even asking any questions. You just start it one time. And if you attack them, the Black Uber Israelite group are widely known to not be taking it. They're going to give it.
They are fundamentally very militant.
So yes, and a lot of them are ex-cons, etc. That's where a lot of the recruiting happened and stuff. So if you attack them, they are going to respond. Who knows what sparked it? It was just very interesting, the kind of weird crosses.
What I think sparked it is the fact that Black Israelites fundamentally believe that the land of Israel is their birthright, is their home. And the pro-Palestinians obviously don't believe in Israel supposed to be a state, right? They believe that it's a colonial, apartheid state. So they would the black Israelites and the pro-Palestinian supporters obviously clash for that day, because the Black Israelites were out there preaching that they are the children of God and their land is that land. And the pro-Palestinians think that, you know, it's Palestinian land and it was stolen and that's not Israel people's land. So obviously the clashes happen, but the funny thing about the clash happening is that Palestinian supporters couldn't say on that day that they were Ashkenazi Jews and they were white. They were black. No, let me understand, why are you pelting stones at Black Israelites who you believe are in your oppressed class as well? Because you see, the thing about it is that once the ideologies don't match up for people of radical leftist views, is that if you're not rocking with me on my ideology, you could be oppressed. We would light you a fire. And that's funny to me, because Hamas would do the same thing to you. So you could support all the Palestinian people you want. Hamas would turn right around and try to turn you and your country into Islamic State. And there would be no, oh my God, we were supporting you all in the early 20s doing with this. They didn't ask for your support. Well, they didn't ask for your support. You wanted to support them and they're willing to use
the little proverb of the, I think it's the toad, the frog, or a frog and the scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
Where the scorpion wants to cross a river. And he asked the toad to give him a ride on his back. And the frog is like, no, I'm not going to give you a ride. You'll sting me. And the scorpion like, no, of course I wouldn't sting you. And the frog is like, you're sure? And the scorpion like, yeah, I wouldn't sting you. He jumps on, the frog starts going across. 3/4 way across, the scorpion flips his tail up, stings him. And as they're both drowning and sinking in the water, the frog asks him, but why you stung me? He said he wouldn't sting me. He said, because I'm a scorpion. And that's the reality that many people seem not to accept in some situations. Eh? That sometimes there are people with a fundamentally different view than you. And even if your both views may seem like they may have a similar direction they're heading in, the enemy of your enemy is not actually your friend. That's a lie.
That's true, because here's the thing. Let's bring it closer to home, right? Some radical revolutionaries, you know, support Africa in its fight for self-determination, and I'm all for that, personally. Me. Now, some of them are very odd. They find it odd that Africa rejects certain parts of that radical leftism. So the acceptance of LGBT people, you know, certain policies, and they want to know, well, why are you doing this? You're supposed to hate the West, and you're supposed to hate capitalism, and you're supposed to reject colonialism. And yes, many Africans reject colonialism and all that good stuff, but they're not ready to accept all of your theories, and that's why Africa is pushing our back against the West, because it comes with a lot of things that they're not willing to accept. And the radical revolutionaries want to know, oh my God, Africa is the African people are brainwashed into colonial thinking, and how could they not accept this? And the African people saying, but we are autonomous. We choose just not to accept certain things. Why can't we have our own autonomy? Why do you want to play neo-colonialism and try to make us accept certain things. And that's when I realized, oh, you're playing with the right one. Y'all ain't catching people on your wave as much as y'all think, just because y'all believe they're part of your oppressed group.
Correct. Correct.
You know? I find it real funny, man. And it always seems to bug me a bit about privileged people living in countries with abundance wanting to have views that they believe should be appropriate per se. And I'm like, sir, you live in America. Your army affords you the right to run in the streets naked if you wanted to. Do you think certain countries allow that? let's think about it, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it's like the American army is the strongest army in the world. And it has afforded you the right to your freedom of speech and your thoughts. And you think that, you know, we have this view that the world should take on because the West is so evil. And fine, you know, many people in parts of the world don't like the West for certain reasons. But it's like, the same country you don't like affords you the right to have the thoughts you have right now. Do you think you want to dismantle that, to have no rights to the thoughts you have now? And every time you answer that, they want to deflect and talk about, oh no, we need to dismantle America. America is the last empire on the face of the planet and yada, yada, yada. And I'm saying, okay, do you want to live in China? And hear them, oh no, no, no. I'm good right here. I could fight the wars right here in America. I asked a few people a while ago, I said, do you want to live in China? Or maybe Vietnam? And they'd be like, no. That's a different way of life. I can't do that. But I said, well, go amongst the people who really revolutionaries out there. Are they really revolutionaries out there?
Yeah.
You know? be a Viet Cong. Because they were really fighting for what they believed in. Right? I said, do you want to be emboldened to the Chinese Communist Party? Like, oh, no. I good. So you like your freedom of speech then? You like what your empire has done? And why would you want to dismantle? That is insane to me. that is insane to me, man.
That is the spoiled children who don't like the parents kind of attitude.
And what's funny, as I said that, right? It seems that the elitists among the radical leftists communist group always tends to be rich folks.
Yeah.
That's
because you see, working class poorer people, they understand reality. You don't, if you're a working person, you know where food comes from. You know that if you don't work, you don't eat. When somebody comes trying to sell you the idea that there's some way we could tweak the system where you would just get free money and you wouldn't really have to work for it. If you're an honest working class person, that does not make sense to you. The only people that make sense to is the jealous, envious, rich, wealthier people, especially those right on the bridge of wealthy, where they would have grown up in wealth, but they would have seen many people richer than them, and they were envious of what many of the people richer than them had. So they're dreaming of a system where they could just take what those people have and disperse it through the system to everybody else. It's an envious kind of attitude why you see many of them at that specific level thinking about the working class. And if you look at many of the people who are at the top of socialism and communism in the Western world, they aren't working class people. They aren't people mixing concrete and turning wrenches during the day. They're very often intellectuals, people who make money from talking for the most part, or writing.
No, and that's true. And what seems to also be a theme within this communist sort of thinking is that the people who believe should be running and representing the people, they have either come from the upper class nobility, or they have come from the poorest of society and worked themselves up into the upper class. So Mao, right? Mao could come from a poor working class family in China, right? But he worked his way up to become the chairman, and he's rich, while he's talking about, well, we trying to work for the people. This is the Workers' Party of China. the rest are working class people, poor, famine, dying, but Mao is living good, eating well. And that seems to be a theme, especially among American people that tend to want to be communists. Oh, they're shouting communism from their $1,400 iPhones in their suits, in their good clothes, in their gated communities, shouting to the heavens, well, we need to dismantle capitalism. This is a fraudulent system. We need to separate. And I'm like, sir, what are you talking about? You benefit from this either way. Because either way, you get to govern the people how you see fit. You get to indoctrinate the people how you see fit. And you have power within this any way you take it. So, and this is what I find regular people should not be indoctrinated into. Thinking that just because certain people want to share their ideology with them, that they are for them. I'm like, that's not how it works. And it's the same thing with the BLM organization, right? Many, many working class black people, problems in their community. And they give their money to this organization, thinking that, yes, we will get restitution. Well, they made $90 million and went to live their Marxist dream in the Calabasas Hills with big, big mansions that have airport strips on them. Interesting, huh? Interesting. The same trained Marxist, three lesbian women who believe that they are trained Marxists and here for the black people, take your $90 million and went and lived outside of the working class poor. Up there with the elite rich folks at, with your monies. Yeah, the stars, I think one of them have a house there in Bahamas, and I find interesting people love to take their things to the Bahamas for some weird reason. Right? That's fairly interesting, but that's crazy, right? And to me, I believe that plenty leftists actually understand the grift of what communism could bring them. And I think people in the West who believe in communism and leftism understand that there's money to be made in the grift. And that's fundamentally capitalist, but you know what I'm saying? They believe in the grift.
Yeah, you see, collectivism has the benefit of scaling, eh? If I'm a collectivist, I could try to convince all of the people in my 1,000-person collective to give me $1 each and I make $1,000. It's like the unions. Unions are fundamentally leftist organizations, but if you look at a union leader, union presidents, they are almost always very wealthy men because they're getting the scaling benefit of collectivism and they're getting the capitalistic reward in the end from it. So there are many people who benefit capitalistically from leftist style organizations. Yeah, it's a popular grift. You're right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, unions definitely there, but to most people, unions are there to protect the people, and sure, some of them do, and that's fine. But as you say, I think unions have outdid their work. You know, I think many things are really enshrined into law that protect workers anyway. So I think. To have unions that there to protect workers' rights necessarily, at this point, union leaders are making a large amount of money from this thing, especially with that whole thing that's going on in America right now with the Writers Guild, you know, with those guys who can't write proper movies in the past 10 years, one reason, you know what I'm saying, believing that Hollywood is one of the greatest capitalistic schemes on the planet. So yeah, it's very interesting, man. It's interesting to me. This whole you know, revolutionary comrade power thing. Really interesting, man. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. Anyway, folks, we have been going for quite some time, so I think we could call it time on this one. So yeah, man, this has been quite an episode. I know it's going to trigger a lot of folks, but plain talk, bad manners, as we like to say in Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago. So yeah, man, you know, plain talk, bad manners, we don't care here what we say. We just come to talk the truth. And, you know, who don't care about the truth could lie down by it, right? So anyway, guys, as you know, we are going to close off. I'm going to let my guest, my bro Nathan Springer, leave all his you know, his handles for all his various platforms, and then we about to close out. So Nathan, bro, run it off, man.
Yeah, well, you can find me, Nathan Springer, NathanSpringer, Nathan Springer. I have a page on Facebook, I have a page on Instagram, I have a page on TikTok also, where I release mostly daily content. The videos are mostly daily, and on weekdays we do the Mindful Live. It's an entertaining and informative session. Tune in, it's a really good session. If you're interested, we also teach. We provide homeschool style classes and individual in-person tutoring. That's Mindful Education, Mindful with two L's, Education. Look out for us on most social media. So yeah, as a wise friend of mine says, closing out in nearly all of the Mindful Lives, don't be mindless, be mindful. So, yeah, folks, it was nice. It was a pleasure, man, Triniota.
Yeah, man. As you all know, I am your host, Triniota. Y'all can follow me on all my platforms, Triniota 98. Follow the podcast page, Plain Talk Bad Manners 2019. As you all know, man, Plain Talk Bad Manners, the rebrand is here. We come in with a load of topics almost every week. I plan to release every week. We definitely can tackle some stuff up in Trinidad and Tobago, because I think our government is starting to get a little out of hand. You know what I'm saying? And I'm ready for tomorrow's Mindful Live as well. Don't know what the topic going to be, but I'm going to be there, as you all know. So follow our pages, follow Nathan page. As you all know, be blessed, people. We are out.